This is part two of the success call with Leslie McDonald. So you've been tracking that data for a long time. Is that innate? Is that just part of your personality? Or did somebody clue you in on that early?
Somebody clued me in on that early. When I went to my initial training, here was my archaic system. Because, and funny, I really didn't know the importance of systems, but I knew I had to have one. So, you know, when I went to the real estate class, they said, okay, you've got to work the past customers. You don't lose them because, you know, they're the easiest people. So I had a 3-ring binder, and every time I had a closing, I would take the MLS printout back in the day of what they bought, and I would staple it to a blank piece of paper, because remember, 1986, we didn't have computers. I would staple it to a blank piece of paper, like with their name, address, their birthdays, whatever. And I had, so the way that I was able to put this into this type of format was I hired a C personality, very analytical person, and handed him all these binders back in like 13 years ago, I think it was. I was very organized. It had the people's name, it had the year, and then, of course, with, you know, technology, it became easier and easier to go backwards. Now, I mean, if you don't have people's birthdays, you know, 6 times out of 10, you can go on Facebook and get it.
Well, Leslie, this farm, you've got 10,000 total, but it's spread out all over. I assume you started with a small farm first. How did you pick where you were going to farm, and how do you continue to pick your farm areas?
It's interesting you would ask that question, because when I started tracking, I really started thinking about, you know, because at one point I was just mailing to the whole town. And I started tracking what I was getting. And what I realized by doing this tracking, because the person that did it for me, because of course I'm not an Excel person, as I told you, I was a waitress, so I didn't go to the Kelly School of Business at Indiana University. in my tracking, so this person I handed all the data to, put them into these pies. Well, you know, obviously it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at this pie and say, okay, and what she did was in the pie, she listed all the neighborhoods. And I'm like, I'm getting 3% of my business from Plymouth Farms, which is an average sale price of, you know, $80,000 back at that time. And I'm getting 6% of my business from, you know, Greg's Landing or whatever, more expensive neighborhood. I don't know if that would be that neighborhood at the time, but let's just say $400,000 neighborhood. So why am I even bothering with this 3%? I should take that money and double it up on the other one. And I could not have seen that if I wasn't seeing this on, you know, in this pie chart. Like, why am I mailing to all these inexpensive places when I could double up my efforts in the more expensive places, spend the same money and get twice the return, 3 times the return, you know? So that's what I did. Now we're doing EDDM, so it's going everywhere. It's funny, those people have kind of almost taken themselves out of the game. They don't even, in the lower ones, because of what I'm sending out, I don't get a lot of those calls. But it's no less or more money to send there than it is, you know, anywhere else.
But you're not mailing to every address in your city. You said you're sending out to 10,000. You have, I think, 20,000 right there in your city. So you're not sending out to everyone. You're still using some type of selection process. Are you going after a certain price range at this point, or is it just where you've been successful? I'm still trying to get an idea of how you are selecting your farms. I understand that you sent out generically, you saw where you had success and where there were higher price points, and you doubled up there. Any other strategies you've used to pick your farm?
No, it's all price driven.
How so?
In our geography, and same thing with anywhere else, you know, you have two neighborhoods that are right next to each other, so obviously we'll mail to that one, but then you have one as an outlier that, you know, there's maybe 5 houses sell there a year. So when we pick our carrier routes, because that's how EDDM works, you pick the carrier routes that you mail to. So the carrier routes basically identify the neighborhood more or less. And that's how we identify where we're going to mail to. I mean, you know, we sat down and said, okay, here's the map. Nope, nope, yes, 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 yes. So within that carrier route, every single address is getting what we're sending. But it's the carrier route pre-selected.
And how are you doing the nope, nope, yes, yes, yes? Are you trying to work the bottom of the market, the middle of the market, the upper end of the market? Are you selecting it that way? How are you picking yes, no, yes, no?
I'm not working the bottom of the market. No is the bottom of the market. because it's all short sales, foreclosures, and people that don't have any equity for the most part. So no, I'm really not interested in marketing there. And then, of course, the buyers can't get financing either. So it's like, no thanks.
So are you picking mid-market, upper market?
I'd say mid to upper. Mid to upper. I have a lot in the mid. And mid here is like 400 to 600 is mid. You know, we don't have any like $10 million homes here, you know. So upper here would be, you know, $1.3 million in the market that I in particular work. Now, if you went to the North Shore, which is along Lake Michigan, that's Kenilworth, Lake Forest, you know, Winnetka. I mean, that's where, but that's really, that's like almost like a whole, at one point we were a different MLS than those people. So it really segregated kind of, okay, you're a Lake County agent, and even there in Lake County, they wouldn't ever like step into our lowly little territory. And I wouldn't be knowledgeable to go over there and sell a $4 million house because I just don't do a lot of business over there.
When you're selecting these farm areas, are you looking at turnover rates or days on the market, or is it strictly price range?
It's a combination of average price and turnover rates. I mean, the average price for me has to be pretty much at least 200. Those neighborhoods sell pretty quickly. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't, there's an area within this area that I would consider that's 200, but they don't sell quickly, so I don't have that on my roster. But then there's another neighborhood that's 200 that sells literally in less than 30 days.
When you first started your farm way back, how big was your first farm? Do you recall?
Well, what I would do, I wouldn't even really call it a farm back in the day because I didn't have enough money, remember? So I would only send out just solds every time I sold something. So literally the minute I sold something, I would send out a just sold so to everybody in that subdivision because my market is very much a bunch of subdivisions. So if I sold a condo in Lake Park Manor, for example, I would, back in the day, because we didn't have all these things that are available to us now, I would literally have a postcard made by a company, and then I would put labels on it and take it to the post office and send out a just sold. And almost every time I did, I'd get some kind of phone call. And then as I got more money, then I started doing more of like a geographic monthly, this is what we're going to do kind of a thing.
Well, Leslie, I want to talk about your team. Could you list out for us the positions on your team and the basic tasks of each of those positions?
I have three buyer specialists, and basically their only task is to work with buyers. They don't do any listings. They don't do anything else. They just literally handle our buyer leads. I have a closing manager who I would also call my office manager, and she kind of runs the whole show in here. She's a high C, being, if no one knows what that is, highly detail-oriented, everything I'm not. She's the person I've hired myself around myself. She handles all our closings. She's in charge of ordering, you know, when we run out of folders. I mean, I have no idea if we have folders or not. I have a listing manager, and her job is she takes the pictures, she creates the brochures, she puts things in the MLS, she does the feedback report, so she's consistently kind of the liaison with the sellers. And then as soon as their house goes under contract, they get moved over to the closing manager. And then I have the social media person that basically she's doing our marketing and our social media, which is posting things on our business page, trying to get reviews on Zillow and Trulia and all that. She's also in charge, once we put things in the computer, of getting our listings onto those sites, making sure they're well represented. And my job is, I'm the only one currently doing listings. I am going to have a listing partner starting here in about a month because I'm really interested in cutting down on the number of listing appointments I'm going on. And my job is basically to, you know, make it all happen.
Leslie, did I miss a position? Is there an admin staff person?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. Yeah, I do have an admin person, and this is another, and I'm glad you brought it up because it would be really bad if I didn't talk about this. So this person works Saturday and Sunday, and as I mentioned earlier, she's kind of like our Gal Friday. She does all the birthday cards, anniversary cards. The other people are way too busy. She works Saturday, Sunday, and 3 days during the week. And it was amazing how easy it was to find somebody that did that. Before she came to work here, she was working in retail, but before that, she was a mortgage loan processor. So she works Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and she's off Thursday and Friday. And she's very happy with that. And so my phone on the weekends never goes into voicemail. She's in charge of, if I get an offer in on the weekend, let's say somebody emails me an offer, the first thing I do is send it back to her. And we have a template that they basically fill in the template, so I don't have to look at the contract. It tells me the purchase price, the earnest money, the close date. It's a very quick formatted template that enables me not to have to like microscopically look through my phone. And they send me the template, they send it to the seller, and that's how it works.
That's a great little system right there, the contract template.
Yeah, so basically what the contract template is, it's like, it's a template that's made every time we get an offer, and they just fill in the blanks, and then they email it. So I'll get the offer, I email it to them, my word is send me details and send a seller. So they send the contract to the seller, and when they send it, they point out any discrepancies in the listing agreement versus the contract. And then they also point that out to me, so I don't have to, you know, we all know in real estate, you go to someone's house, they exclude the refrigerator, and then somebody puts it in the contract, and then you find out, oh, I missed it somehow because you didn't look at the listing agreement. They thought, well, it was excluded in the listing agreement, and, you know, so this avoids that whole mess because they're in the office here looking at the listing agreement and the contract and telling me what doesn't match up.
Would you mind disclosing to us how you've structured the compensation for, say, your buyer specialists?
Buyer specialists are 50-50, and that's pretty much it. I mean, they get 50%.
They're 50-50 split, and there's no adjustment for volume or years, time served with you or anything else. It's just a 50-50 split, and it doesn't matter what type of business it is, whether they generated it or you generated it.
Nope, it's 50-50. If they generate a listing lead outside of my sphere or whatever, I would say that then they'll get 25%, but they don't have to do anything. If their sister calls and wants to list their house, they get 25% and I get the rest.
When you're looking to hire a buyer specialist, are you looking for people with experience or without?
Every person on my team was experienced before. One of them was my admin person who's been with me for 26 years. And it was her and I for the longest time. And her first year, she made $250,000 and sold 48 houses. And that's because she had been sitting here listening to me. So she really went to real estate. We had the same office. So she really went to real estate school for a long time. And what happened was I was paying her so much as an admin because over the years I kept giving her raise after raise. We got all the way up to, you know, $90,000, and that was a few years ago, for admin pay, which was ridiculous. So I thought, okay, I've got to figure out what to do, and we needed more help. So then it's like, well, this is going to be a disaster. So I said, do you want to become an agent? And she said, perfect, I'm sick of this admin stuff. So she became an agent, and then I hired two people to replace her because we didn't have enough help at that time.
Are you profitable?
My expenses are at 29%. If you really think about some of the things that I've told you that I'm doing, a lot of it's web-based, you know, like in our drawings, we're sending them out. The monthly drawings only cost our giveaways are only $200. These cards, we're making them ourselves. So I'm very budget conscious. That's why I'm not doing billboards. I'm not doing radio. I'm not going to spend $8,000 to $10,000 a month on these types of things. I'm not saying it doesn't work, but I'm very, very bottom line conscious. I am income driven, not ego driven. And so I'm just doing whatever I have to do to get business. And if you really think about what I'm doing, my client party is $10,000, my ties are $5,000, my drawing giveaways, you know, it just really doesn't add up to a whole lot of money. My three buyer's agents are compensated by themselves, you know, the closing admin, those four people. I mean, my head person is, you know, at about $80,000. And the other ones are 50, 45, and about 40. So really, I don't have a ton of expenses. You know, I just don't. The company that I work for doesn't get any split of my commission. I just pay like a flat desk fee, basically.
Do I understand correctly that your net profit that drops to the bottom line is around 71%. So $100 of commission comes in the top, $71 goes home with you.
You got it.
Wow.
Well, if you think about what I'm telling you I'm doing from a marketing standpoint, pretty much the only thing I'm spending any kind of substantial money on really is the direct mail. You know, because everything else is pretty inexpensive. Like even, you know, when we close on a house, we don't do $150 closing gifts like a lot of people do. We put a sketch that we print on our computer in a cardboard thing. It costs us $12, but it looks like $1 million. And that's our closing gift. And then we send them a you know, closing gift stamp. So our average closing gift is $30. You know what I mean? So it just doesn't cost a lot of money what we're doing. And that's why I tend to focus on two or three things and stick with it. Because I know I could do a million other things, but what's the point if I just have to spend a bunch of money?
So by focusing on a few things and getting really good at them, you're also able to achieve these efficiencies or these economies of scale where you're able to reduce your cost and therefore increase your net. That's fantastic.
Even my accountant says he does a ton of realtors. He's like, I've never seen anything like this. I don't know how you do it. But I do it because, you know, I already live with no money, so I don't want to do that twice, you know. Once was enough. It's not high on my list of things I want to do in my later years, you know.
Well, Leslie, what drives you?
It's very interesting. It's all for me about having fun. And, you know, people are like, well, how does working a ton have, you know? Well, the thing is that, you know, I have 5 children. I have 4 grandkids. And every single week, all I can do, and I have a lot of friends, and all I can really do every single week is figure out how to fund my lifestyle. And my lifestyle is not, you know, having a Gucci purse or whatever. It's being able to take my whole family to Mexico every year, which is now my immediate family is now 14 people, and pay for everything. It's being able to take my friends that might not have any money to Nashville for their birthday. It's the freedom. It's money, but it's money in a different way, because the money buys me the freedom to do what I want to do. And I'm very, very, very big on balance. I spend a ton of time with my grandchildren. I spend a great deal of time with my husband. Last night I was out with one of my friends. Tonight I'm going to a title company thing where a ton of my friends are going to go to. This weekend we're going up to our lake house, and we're having 30 friends over for a barbecue. And, you know, instead of having hot dogs, you know, I can have skirt steaks. Do you know what I mean? So that's what drives me. So it's not about me having a nice car or a nice purse. It's about being able to share what I've been able, fortunate enough to have with the people I really care about.
Leslie, why have you been so successful?
I think a lot of it is I enjoy it. I mean, yes, there's days I really don't enjoy it, but I enjoy what I do. I think I'm well aware of the freedom that I have. I was never a great student, which is why I went to one semester of college and ended it really quickly. And I think a lot of it is, in the beginning, I really didn't have much of a choice, otherwise we were all going to starve to death. But I think what drives me now is literally just knowing that I have the freedom to pretty much do anything I want within reason. You know, I mean, if I want to have a lake house, I could just build one, you know. And it's that freedom. It's not about the material thing. It's the freedom to know that I could do that if that's what I want to do. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but by building that lake house, I am able to have all my kids every single weekend, all weekend long. We have the best time. I love my son-in-laws. You know, it's so that's what drives me is just my family and friends. And all of this is just a catalyst to get to there. That's how I see it.
Leslie, if you were going to advise a brand new agent just getting in the business, what would you tell them to do first?
Well, obviously, if you're a brand new agent getting into business, the biggest thing is you have to pick something that you enjoy doing related to the business. For example, if you hate doing open houses, don't do them because you're not going to be good at it. I think the next thing, the one thing I will say that I did that I think was huge, I found somebody that was doing well. And I found other, like Star Power at the time, but, you know, somebody that was doing well, and asked them if they'd be willing to not mentor me, because busy people really don't want to. I get asked the question all the time. But really kind of watch what they're doing. And the biggest thing is the minute you do anything, just make it a system, because it's a key to success. And I think a lot of new agents, what happens is they try a million different things. They try something for 2 months and it doesn't work. And so they're like, oh, that didn't work. Pick 2 or 3 things to do with absolute consistency, you know, and that's what I would say. So for example, if you're going to work with a company like Market Leader, I mean, which is, I think, top producer or whatever, and that's what you're going to do, just do it for 12 months and do it with absolute conviction and consistency, because that's the key to this whole thing. Systems and consistency. That's what I figured out when I was brand new, the first year when I did what I told you I did, whatever that was. I picked 2 or 3 things. I did open houses, I did floor time, and I mailed out just solds. Those were the 3 things I did when I was new. And I did those same things over and over and over again for many years in a row. And I just kept doing more and more business, and then I got help. And that's the other thing. A lot of agents get to the point where they know they need to do something, but the fear steps in the way of, oh, I don't want to hire somebody because, oh, what if I don't have enough hours, or what if I don't have enough money, or what if, you know, forget the what if. Nobody's going to die if you hire somebody and you don't have enough hours for them. The worst case is you'll let them go. I mean, there's no bad decision.
Leslie, do you think that top agent interviews like the one we're doing now with Mastermind Agent are valuable?
They're invaluable. That is literally was a huge key to my success. I listened, and that was my point of just bringing this up. I listened to interview after interview of people that were seasoned producers, and there were certain people that I completely identified with and other people that I'm like, this is of zero value to me. And I just took what I liked and I left the rest behind. I didn't get all caught up on, well, that was a waste of time, or I'm not doing that, or, wow, I don't have that kind of money. When you listen to these interviews, and when I listen to these interviews, I would literally sit there with a pen and listen for the pearls that would come along. And there were times, I mean, I would listen to some super high-tech person that's geotagging, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there is no way I'm ever doing this. And instead of getting upset about it, like, well, that's stupid, it doesn't work, well, you know, which a lot of people say when they don't like what they hear, you just take what you like and leave the rest behind. Everybody has something to offer. I have Pay It Forward Tuesdays in my office quite, you know, a lot, where agents ask me, can we go to lunch? I say, just come in my office from 10 to 12 on Tuesday. We'll sit down. I'll go through whatever, which they almost fall over because they're my direct competition. They can't believe I would do it. And I cannot tell you how many times they could be brand new agents. They say something and I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. Or there's one agent in my market that's doing really, really well with Trulia. And I'm like, well, what are you doing? You know, and then she was just telling me, well, the minute I've got this guy comes to my phone and I call the people immediately, and I'm thinking, well, yeah, when mine comes to my phone, I like stare at it for a week. So no wonder I'm not doing well at it. But you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, why am I paying for zip codes if I'm not going to call the people back? It's kind of stupid. So every time I meet with somebody, I get something out of it too.
Well, Leslie, I've come to the end of my questions for today. Do you have any parting thoughts for the listeners?
My only parting thought is there's no right or wrong way to do this real estate thing. It's just pick what you like to do within the scope of the business. Pick 2 or 3 things that you like. But the number one thing I would say is if you want to have any semblance of an existence, life-wise or business-wise, you have to get a database, you have to work it, and you have to continue listening to interviews like this, because this is what's going to make the ideas pop in your head. And once you get these ideas, if you have the systems in place, they become systems. That's how you succeed with all the knowledge you gain.
Well, Leslie, you give sage advice. You had a fast start in real estate and never looked back. You were driven to succeed through necessity, and you continue to succeed so you can share the fruits of your labor with your family and friends. You built your business based on conviction, consistency, and systems. You've mastered the fundamentals, focused on the methods that work, built systems for consistency, and achieved an amazing 71% net profit margin. Thank you for sharing and being our top agent of the month. And join us next call when we talk to an agent who sold 101 homes last year and loves to prospect for business. Find out who she is on the next Success Call.
You've been listening to Success Calls on the Mastermind Agent Network. where top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.